It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pants Podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pants, it's the Purple Pants. Oh, what it do? Oh, what's up? And welcome to episode 117, Intuition of the Purple Pants Podcast. I have the honor of serving as your humble and oh so gracious host, Bryce Isaiah. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. I want to shout out all my first time listeners. What's up to the Purple Pants Posse? Hey, we back again. If you have not already, please make sure you are subscribed to the Purple Pants Podcast. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, all of the podcast catchers. Just type in Purple Pants. Okay. Hit subscribe, write a review, and tell a friend to tell a friend. Now listen, y'all. Baby boy then had a week. Okay. We are just coming back from Bryce and Wynn Presents the District. And I have to shout out everyone in the DMV. Hold on. The DMV area that came out to watch and have a great time with us. If you saw the photos, you know, we brought the queen of Survivor out. Saree and her son Jared came to join us. And y'all know I was on cloud nine. I don't even know how I kept that secret, because y'all know I wanted to scream it from the top of my lungs. We had Ovi from Big Brother. We had Brendan Shapiro from Ghost Island. We had Jatia Hart Taylor. Wendell and I are just so grateful for everyone that came out. It was a situation. Okay. Listen, at the last minute, we had to change locations, but you know, given how Bryson went roll, we go with the vibes and we want to make sure that we can bring you the best event possible. And so we were glad that we did in the end. The new location was just very accommodating and it was just so amazing. I do have to shout out the Purple Pants Posse, because whenever we have these events and people come up to me and they say they listen to the podcast, sometimes in the back of my mind, I'll be like, do you really listen or you just saying that? But I cannot tell you how many of the Purple Pants Posse came up to me, was telling me, I sent in an advice with Bryce. Your advice with Bryce truly helped me. I love Barb's message. I am such a energetic person that it literally at times brings me to tears, or I have to do a spin just to be to hear what you're saying, because at times I don't believe it. I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? So it was such an honor to meet so much of the Purple Pants Posse's, to meet so many of the people in the DC area that said we've never had a Survivor event here. Thank you so much. It was literally amazing and we cannot thank you enough. Okay. The District was a hit. And if you don't know already, Bryce and Wynn Presents Philadelphia. We are coming back home for homecoming November 17th. We are going to have a Philly watch party, so you can get your tickets now. You know, the Philly crew will be in the building. Click the link in my bio or Wendell's bio so you can bless your life and we can watch some more Survivor together. Halloween was this weekend and baby, listen. Oh, child. I know I say I'm in my early to late to early 30s, but baby, it was very much given. Baby boy was an old soul this weekend. I had went out to a couple of Halloween parties. Okay. Baby boy went out back to back. Okay. And child, my back was hurting. Okay. I spent all Sunday in the bed. I needed a heating pad. I didn't had to order Uber Eats because I didn't want to do anything. I was tired. Okay. I'm like, I didn't even really drink. And you know, your baby boy loves to wet his whistle. I just was tired. And I guess given we're coming out, or we've been in a pandemic for so long, baby boy used to run in the streets. Okay. I'm for the streets. Okay. Your baby boy used to be for the streets. Now I'm for my bed and a heating blanket and a pillow and a blanket. But I had such a great time just going out, hanging out with my friends. Yeah, it was a lot. I feel like I learned a lot through some of my friendships this weekend, and we can get into that in the church announcements. But I am really excited for this week's episode. Okay, so let me give you the rundown of this week's episode. We've got the church announcements, and on the menu this week, we got the reunion of our baby boys. I have Wendell Holland, okay, the winner of Ghost Island, a contestant on Winners at War. Okay, the HGTV star is back for Survivor News, and we welcome our original Survivor News anchor, okay, baby boy Jack, but you might know him as Jack Atkins, aka Emily from The Circle. We are breaking down the latest episode of Survivor, and listen, if you want to watch along, you can click on my YouTube, Bryce Isaiah, and you can watch the video too. Listen, I suggest you watch the video too, okay, because the baby boys are breaking it down. We've got Queen Jatia back from the district and on the podcast, breaking down the last two episodes of The Real Housewives of Potomac. We've got Freak of the Week. And listen, it's just another jam-packed episode. So let's get into the church announcements. The church announcements. And on this week's church announcements, I just want to talk a little bit about intuition and how we need to follow our intuition, whether it is in your job, whether it is in your friendships, whether it's in throwing an event and you feel like you get to one place and like your intuition is just telling you, I don't know if this is the right place. And, you know, you're scared, you're nervous to pull the trigger, but ultimately follow your intuition. Something similar happened this week on the Bryson Wimper Zents, where we had to pull an audible and, you know, change the location at the last minute. Ultimately, it worked out for the best for us following our intuition. And so I was thinking about, you know what, naming the podcast something in the essence. And then over the weekend, I was planning on hanging out with some of my friends. And I don't know if anyone ever has friends in your life that like, I don't know, like friendship should be like effortless. Friendship should be easy. If any of you guys ever have had like a friend in your life where it is constantly problematic, there's always like an issue, there's always something. And if you're like me, it's like, I don't ever want to give up on a friendship. I feel like it is a relationship, and I feel like, you know, I'm sticking through you through the thick and the thin. But, you know, over the weekend, I really had the realization that the saying, like, some people come into your life for a reason or a season, and sometimes the season is over, and it's nothing that, like, you have done. It's nothing the person has done. You've grown. And you know, you just truly have to follow your intuition. And I just had an interaction with a friend over the weekend that normally I have these interactions and like, you know, I experience them and I'm just like, I just keep it to myself. But I had like other friends around that got to see this friend in action. And I just really came to the conclusion, like, I don't really know where or how much more this friendship can go. And it was definitely devastating to me in the sense that like, it's like a loss. But I truly had to just follow my intuition and be like, I wish this person well. I hope that they go on to amazing things, but I just don't know where or how we move forward. And it's definitely something hard. It's definitely something that is not easy. But like I say on this podcast all the time, you know, we've got to put ourselves first. We've got to put our feelings first. A lot of time in friendships, I put myself on the back burner. I hype my friends up. I do what I can do to make sure that I am supporting them. And if it is all the time that way, if it's never really reciprocal, if it's always like a one-sided friendship, if it's always like you've got to cater to that friend, you got to ensure that, like, you know, you can't truly be yourself around them, what is the point? And so I just really like this weekend, just I'm following my intuition and just saying, I don't know if I don't want to be your friend anymore, but I know that I need to take a step back because this friendship does not serve me. And I don't know if you guys have ever been in that position before, but go with your gut, follow your intuition. And, you know, if it's meant to be, you guys might reconnect at another point and place and time. And if the friendship has come to an end, you know what? You can still celebrate the friendship that you had. You can still wish that person amazing things, but it's just not meant for you guys to be in the same form that you have been. And that's growth, for me or for you to be able to come to that point and actually say it. Nothing nasty has to be said. Nothing. I just remember walking away, from an event this weekend and just being like, you know what? This does not serve me well. Or, you know what? A friendship shouldn't be this hard. And I'm going to follow my intuition. I'm going to put myself first and say, I'm good. And guess what, Purple Pants Posse? That's okay that you come to that. And for me, it's just very hard and sad. But at the end of the day, I'm on a road to a better Bryce. And I have to realize that as I am on this road to a better me, everybody is not going to come on that road with me. And I have to be okay with that, because the tools that I am building, the growth that I am enhancing myself, that just means like I'm doing the right thing. And I just encourage anyone and everyone, and no matter what the situation is, if it's a friendship, if it's a relationship, if it's a job, if it's a neighbor, like follow your intuition and trust your gut.
It's a man who, it's a man you, me and potatoes like we cooking up a great stew. It's a man who, it's a man you, me and potatoes like we cooking up a great stew.
And we are back this week with the Survivor News on the Purple Pants Podcast. And listen, if you listening, you might want to take a look on the YouTube, because we are live and in color with not one baby boy, but two baby boys. We've got the winner of Ghost Island. We've got Winners at War HGTV host Wendeezy Holland. And listen, it's giving not square, not octagon, but it's given the circle. Jack Atkins has returned to the podcast. What is popping, everybody?
What's up? So happy to be back, Bryce.
Yes. If y'all are watching on YouTube, Jack is giving very much Halloween, Coach Jack. Jack
referee. Coach,
referee.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I figured we're recording the day before Halloween. I have to dress up a little bit, but I guess I didn't get the memo. Oh. Although you got your butterfly clip.
He's dressed up, Jack. He is dressed up. Look at this guy.
I got the broccoli taking over. It's been a while since we've talked to you, Jack. How has life been transitioning from the circle back to school? Survivor's on. What's that giving?
Oh, I mean, it's been so long, not only since we had that last, since we had Winners at War and we covered Winners at War, but just, you know, being on the podcast, it's been over a year now. So I'm so happy to be back. Talk about Survivor. You know how much I love Survivor, and my friend Xander's on it and he's been crushing it. So it's been amazing watching the season unfold with him. But other than that, yeah, obviously since the last time we had a Survivor season, I did the Circle season 2, which was a crazy experience in itself. Definitely switched up my life a little bit, but I've been doing well. I'm back in school, still finishing that up. And just pushing through. Things have been great, though. Things have been great.
We love that. You say you know Zaddy Zans. I think I talked about it on the podcast, but how do you know Xander?
So Xander and I are in the same fraternity at my school, and he's actually like my little in the fraternity. So I'm Zaddy Xander's actual Zaddy in the guy. So I'm a Zaddy Zad. I'm a grand Zaddy. So.
And is this the same fraternity that the great Spencer from, or Raymond from Cagayan went to?
It is the same fraternity. We've got, he's on one of the composites that we have in the house. Our fraternity, I guess, is somehow just the reality TV fraternity. It's a really crazy coincidence. Xander and I were doing casting at the same exact time for our respective shows. So the fact that not only one of us, but both of us got on TV is just mind blowing, honestly. But it's been so great to experience with him.
Were y'all comparing notes while you were going through casting?
A little bit. I think most of my casting happened primarily while he was in the early stages of his, but obviously I did my best to help him in any way I could, give him any tips that I felt like I knew, but he's such a dynamic person that I think he was going to crush it regardless. So
was Xander a fan of the show, or did you get him into Survivor? Ooh, not the buff on the hand.
Oh yeah. We got to rep the tribe. Yeah. So that's also like just a crazy component of the whole story is last summer, before either of us had applied to the respective shows. He and I were the only ones living in our fraternity because it was over the summer. It was COVID going on. A lot of people were home. And most days we would wake up and just binge watch Survivor together. He had watched it growing up with his family, but I think he stopped in like the early 20s. And then once Winners at War came on, he and his family started watching again, and he knew I was a Survivor fan. So we were just rewatching seasons. I've watched some seasons so many times out of most of the summer, I wasn't watching a ton, but I'd come out of my room and he'd be in the living room watching a season every day. And it was, and so finally I realized he was in the casting process. I was like, all right, it makes sense why you've like religiously watching this show.
Do we know if Team Xander is a Team Wendell fan?
I would assume Xander is a Team Wendell fan. Yeah. Why wouldn't he be?
I mean, I don't know. I appreciate that. Yeah, I like Xander. Another question for you, Jack, because you know Xander very well, is there a Survivor from the past that kind of reminds you of Xander?
Yeah, I think Xander is he comes across as that, you know, surfer bro, maybe a little bit naive. I think it is people's perception of him, but he's actually a super smart guy. Obviously, our school is a very solid school. He's studying like business and computer science. On the show, they say he's an app developer. The kid's great with computer programming, which is something I never have any idea about. So he's a very smart person, and he's also very caring and loving to all different types of people. So I think a lot of people perceive him as, you know, that athletic straight white male who might be kind of douchey, but in reality, I think he's got so many layers to him. So to compare him to a player, I wouldn't compare him to that classic like Joe or Ozzy. I think he's a little bit different than that, but I think he does give kind of like a Devin or a Jay or even a Fabio type of vibe. But I definitely think he's smarter than he lets on.
That's dangerous in Survivor. He looks like, you look at him, you think of that surfer bro, but University of Chicago is no slouch of a school. So yeah, you guys, he's something. He's like, he's different, and that helps in Survivor if you look one way but you could play a whole different way.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah.
How did you look and play? How did you look and play, Bryce?
I look like how I play. Okay. What's been going on with you and DC? We back from the Bryce and Wynn Presents the District. And when I say it was on go, it was on go, bro.
It was on go. My demeanor right now is a little different because I just had a basketball tournament today. I played six.
Was Jack refereeing?
Jack was refereeing. Jack Wendell was out
scoring,
there talking about.
He was scoring buckets.
Jack was out there throwing technical fouls out there. He threw my buddy out of the game, actually. He threw Skase out of the game.
We're calling everything.
Yeah. So I had my tournament today. We got to the championships and lost in the championship.
Oh, no, not Winners at War. Part two. Yeah.
That's how it felt. But I'm still on this high off of our, you know, Wednesday, our Bryce and Wen Present the District. We killed it. There were 300 amazing in attendance. Yeah, it was great. It was great.
We brought the queen out. Like the Queen Saree, and y'all know how much I love Saree. And I was trying not to cut up. I like was trying my hardest not to cut up. I was like, Bryce, don't twerk on Saree. Don't twerk on Saree. And what I end up doing, twerking on Saree. Okay. It was really a great time. And before we even get into the Survivor aspect of it, I wanted to just point out some of the things that I feel like Wendell and I discovered this week. And we don't have to go into great detail, but I really think that there is importance in trusting your instinct and going with your gut feeling. Because at times you might walk into a situation and you're like, I don't know what to do. I don't feel 1,000% right. And your gut is telling you that. And sometimes you continue with the situations. And so I just think that it's important that if you don't feel right, pull an audible. Okay. Pull an audible.
Yeah, I'm going to have to piggyback on that because I do want to thank everyone that came, because in the ninth hour, we had to switch the venue. We weren't getting the best vibe from the previous venue. And it took a lot for us to say, you know what, after our walkthrough, for us to just switch it. And thankfully, everybody just, you know, we sent out the right emails, we gave the right notice, and everyone came to the next venue. And it was, in trusting our gut, it was the right venue. Like the ownership there, the food there, they had a special Survivor menu that we didn't even ask for. The venue we moved to, I gotta shout them out, Proper 21 on K Street. We get in there, we go a few hours early to set up usually. And as soon as we get there, the owner is there. He shows us the special menu. And we're just like, bro, this is it. This works. This is what we needed. He played I'm a Survivor while we were setting up. Bryce was acting a fool and it just felt right. So yeah. To echo Bryce, if you trust your gut, sometimes you got to take that leap of faith. It was right for us. And I'm going to continue to trust my gut going forward.
Absolutely. And huge shout out to all of the RHAP family that came through. Matt Scott, Mari, Isaiah, Josh Reed was in the building. We greatly appreciate you guys and all of the amazing people that came up dressed up. It was so much fun. I always feel like at our events, I try my best to say hi and to just speak to everyone. And so I am excited that if you were unable to make Bryce and Wynn Presents the District, well, you got another opportunity because Bryce and Wynn Presents Philadelphia is giving Very Much Homecoming November 17th at 312 Lounge in Philadelphia. We will be there with some special guests. Tickets are available on both Bryce and Wendell's Instagram. Just click the link in our bios on Twitter and get you a ticket.
Get you a ticket. And we just also want to thank our reality family for coming out and showing out. Sari came from North Jersey. We wanted to keep it a secret. You know, we kept on saying we have special guests. But there's one special guest.
Special.
And we didn't want to release it. And we just kept it quiet. And when she walked in the building, the roof blew off the building. I'd be remiss if we didn't say thank you. Big thank you to Brendan from Ghost Island.
His son Will came from school and went back to school.
Drove all the way up. Yeah, he drove all the way up from Richmond. Who else came?
Ovi from Big Brother was in the building.
Jatia girl came
Hart
through.
Taylor.
Yes, so...
It was a star-studded event, and we just want to say thank you to everybody. But all right, enough about what Jack been doing up in the dorm room that don't really look clean, but look clean. And enough about Wendell taking another L. We used to that.
Yo, Bryce. You got a yellow card.
Now, real quick, before we go into it, Jack, what's the move for a flagrant foul?
Is that a technical one?
Team Bryce,
yeah, you tee him up, Bryce. Bryce.
So why Wendell do it all cool though? Wait, is it like a?
It's like a tee. So you can just be like,
Bryce.
So we start off at the Uwa tribe.
Ooh.
And it is right after they vote out Jeannie. Ricard and Shan are laying there and they're kind of, Ricard wants to bring up the fact that 5 minutes before tribal, that's when Shan brought up the extra vote to him and they had that kind of confrontation. We weren't really sure as viewers if that happened like a little earlier, if they had time to get on the same page. But now we learn that that happened 5 minutes before tribal. And so, yeah, they really went into tribal with some kind of tension in the air. And you could still feel the tension when they're laying together talking about that.
1,000%. And I felt like last episode, I was a little bit on Shan's side. Yeah, like, you know, I get it. But after this episode, I'm kind of sort of like, I feel like I ain't mad at Ricard. You know, he lays out his point so well. I mean, it's a hard thing because I understand from Shan's point, like if I ask for it back and you're my closest ally, give it back and we good. But from Ricard's standpoint, and you know me, I'm playing Survivor a game of one. So from his standpoint, it's like, why are you making a thing a thing? I don't know. What do you think, Jack? What would you have done in that situation?
It's such a tough situation. And this is like in Survivor history, the first tribe of two that really has such like blatant cracks, right? Like you look at Malcolm and Denise, they were thick as thieves. Even back in Guatemala, like Steph and Bobby John, like pretty neutral relationship. But Ricard and Shan are just such cutthroat players that now that it's just down to them and you throw Jeannie in the mix, like they just can't trust each other. I do agree. I think Ricard has been an evil mastermind so far in this game. Maybe even more so than Shan, just the way that Ricard set up, you know, the broccoli line, lied to Jeannie about testing out the idol line. I think Ricard's really been crushing it, but it is tough because when you know Shan is someone who's so cutthroat and just slit JD's throat, how can you really trust anything she's saying? So you want to keep that ammunition. But obviously, it's also tough because by saying, no, I'm not going to give this back to you yet, that kind of just fuels the fire and fuels the rivalry that you have. So it's just a weird position. But I think it was pretty good for both of them that they were able to just like sort of smooth things over, at least to get themselves to the fake merge and then go from there. Because coming from a tribe of two, it's not likely that they'll be big targets.
He literally just saw the play she tried to move on him on JD, and he kind of called her out for it. And Ricard is that kind of player. Like, he's no slouch. Mm. And so I guess you see this dissension amongst the two of them in this episode. And my question is, are we getting set up for a confrontation? When might it be? Like, what's going to happen with these two? Can they make it to the end together? Or is it like, you know what? We are going to see them go head to head at some point.
I don't see them at the end together. I don't know whether they'll be the ones to take each other out, but I just think they're too. What we saw in the when them being the last two on their Uwa tribe pre-merge, that sort of dynamic and intensity and tension is not gonna sustain itself throughout the end game.
Yeah, I agree. Whoever goes out, the other person had a helping hand in that. There's just no way out of that.
That's what you see happening. Okay. And one of them is in a more powerful position because ultimately the next day, Shan asks Ricard again for the advantage and he gives it to her. Awkward. And he gives it to her, but they just, it doesn't, you feel this air that they're not on the same page. And
yeah. I people did question that move on Ricard's behalf, but I do think you're going in the merge. There's been zero swaps. This is literally the one person in the game that Ricard has like met before. So you don't want to go in on bad terms with them. So if you need to give away that extra vote, even though the whole way that they went about it was really awkward and not the best for either of them.
Messy.
I think just giving that extra vote back, kind of wiping the slate clean and going into the merge, at least on neutral terms, is very important because you don't want to be on bad terms with the one person in the game that you know.
Right. But see, this is my point. Like, I think that, great, he gave it back, but you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. The crack has been split at this point. So even him giving it back does not solidify them. So I almost feel like Spicy Brycey or Spicy Ricard should have just kept it. And at least going into the merge, you know where you stand.
Bryce, you keep that thing going into the merge. You know you're a target.
Okay. First. All right. Well, listen, that's why I make the merge. Okay. That's
although I will say this is something I thought about, and this kind of goes back to the genie vote. I almost think Ricard had an opportunity to pull off a huge move against Shan. I don't know if it would have been best for his game, but I was thinking if I was in Ricard's shoes, I think I might have done the following. I would have said, hey, Shan, like we obviously have some tension. What I'm going to do, I'm going to use my vote and your extra vote and just put them on genie. Make sure genie goes home. That way Shan has no choice but to vote with me to vote Genie, but I'd actually put those two votes on to Shan and get rid of Shan, because if Shan wants to pull a fast one on you, I think she would take Ricard saying that he's going to put those votes on Genie like as face value. She might play her idol on Genie just to get Ricard out. I don't think she would ever expect Ricard to put both votes on her. Now, that would be effectively voting out your closest ally in the game, but then you don't have to deal with Shan and all of her advantages. You don't have to deal with, I guess, kind of her desire to have so much power in the game. Now you're going into the merge with Genie, who you weren't on the best terms with, but Genie seems like someone who's super agreeable in the game. And if you make that move to save her, I feel like she'll be on your side going into the merge. Now, I don't know if that's the best move, but that's something I thought about. That would be a crazy move and potentially work better for Ricard's game.
That would be a big move. Now, what would be the benefit of that as opposed to just putting them on Shan without telling her that you're going to use the two votes?
I think the benefit of that is that, I guess that's fair.
Because like you could just blindside her with those two votes feasibly, right?
Yeah, but I think if you do that, one, I think by telling her that you're going to use them on Genie, I think forces her to vote with you. Whereas if you don't say anything, there's a chance that she and Genie put their votes on you. I also think by telling her that, which is kind of like an unpleasant truth, I think she's more likely to trust that that's what you're actually going to do. Whereas if you don't say anything and you're just like, oh yeah, Shan, I'm totally just voting Genie, like I'm voting Genie, whatever, she might get sus and play her idol or something. But I agree. If you feel like the situation's right, you could just throw those two votes on Shan.
I just think there's something to telling her that you're about to burn her extra vote. Like, I feel like she might.
But how does she respond to that? Like,
well, if
you have two of the four votes, how does Shan counterplay that is the thing. The only thing I can think of is that she'd play her idols on Genie.
Or she thinks like, all right, Genie, I don't know. But yeah, that would have been an awesome move if he would have put two on Shannon voters.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it's the best move, but it would have been a big move. Yeah.
Right.
But it seems like as much, and I was going to point this out, like in preparing to discuss this episode, I do love the fact that every single tribe has so many cracks within it, whether it's a tribe of two or a tribe of six. But with Shan and Ricard, I do think going in the merge that they're on fine enough terms. And going back to what Wendell was saying, I think right now they're kind of just treating the game as independent players. I don't think they're targeting each other, but I don't think that they're going to actively protect each other if the time comes.
Right.
But that's better than maybe the relationship of like Liana is targeting Xander or Sydney is targeting Nasir. Like to have someone actively from your own tribe targeting you is definitely worse than just like not working with them completely.
Right. So we get to the merge that isn't the merge, but you half merge, but you got to play to merge, and then somebody is merged, and then two people got to go. Somebody break that down for me because I was a little confused.
Okay. Yeah. We jump right to this, this merge thing. And basically what you have is the newly merged group is going to draw for teams, and two of the people are going to draw, I think he said a gray rock. Uh-huh. Those two people sit out. The other two tribes compete, and the winner of that gets the merge feast, gets a merge buff, and is immune in tribal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Immune in tribal.
And then the losers have to go to tribal. And so that's what happened. And the teams were Xander, Heather, Liana, Tiffany, and Shan against Danny, Ricard, Deshaun, Evie, and Sydney. And
extremely
the
unfair teams.
Crazy. Yeah. And it seems like Xander continually is on his tribe with all women. And he continues to kill it at each challenge, whether he wins or not. To see the beast in Xander kill it, you know, I'm a Xander fan. So yeah. Listen, I'm a shout out Zaddy Zan every chance I get.
Relax. Same here. I mean, no, he absolutely crushed it. That challenge was brutal. And just talking to Xander about it after, he said it was even harder than it was made out to be on TV. He still has scars to this day from that. I honestly was a little nervous about the boulder because when they were getting up under that boulder,
they rolled back.
Rolls back. Getting crushed, but thankfully nothing happened. But before the challenge even started, Xander was like, guess what my team was? I was like, I don't know, like Tiffany, Heather, Shan, and like Evie. He was like, basically, yeah, like it was horrible. And I don't know what to think about this whole challenge. Like, I don't necessarily mind the twist, but jumping ahead a little bit, and we'll obviously talk about this later, the whole twist with Erica getting to reverse this situation, and I think her decision is so obvious that she should reverse it, that for the quality of the episode and the twist, I just think it's so pointless. Like, the people that win are basically guaranteed to actually be the losers. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Yeah, I like the twist just for an underdog person, but let's stay in order so that we could get together. Yeah. One, when they went through the boulder challenge and they had to figure out the merge feast, I thought of you, Jack. I was like, oh, baby boy is tight with the slide puzzles. Do you think that you would have been able to get that quickly?
I mean, I think that puzzle, obviously there was a sliding component. I think it was more so a word puzzle, right? You have to solve the word.
I'd be stuck.
I think if I knew the word, it wasn't too bad for a word puzzle, all things considered, because sometimes it's like, oh, you got to dig deep to make it to this merge feast with only 12 of you left. And you're like, what's going on? I don't know. I think that puzzle I probably could have figured out. It seems pretty logical. I thought the challenge was great overall. I mean, just as a challenge.
I paused it, and the only word that I could see was free. And I know if I was out there, I would have been like, I would have not been able to see anything else but
both the words were five letters, thought Bryce.
It's Bryce Isaiah. Yeah, they had that word puzzle was on Ghost Island. It wasn't that word, but that type of a word puzzle, I think it's spelled Ghost Island or something like that. Yeah. I didn't do it, but yeah, after going through a challenge, like you said, Xander was all beat up and bruised. We see it in the episode, and for anybody to go through all of that and then have to solve a word puzzle, it ain't easy. Yeah. But if I was going to put my money on either tribe, I would know that the tribe with Danny, Ricard, Deshaun, Evie, and Sydney would get to the puzzle first, which they did.
Yeah.
And it was Ricard and I believe Danny that just killed
Ricard
the puzzle.
Ricard killed the puzzle. I mean, it seemed like Yellow did figure out the puzzle, the word pretty fast once they got there, but definitely struggled a little bit with, you know, moving the pieces around. And I will say, you were talking about how Xander's crushing these challenges, which he fully is. It's almost so much worse. Obviously, it sucks to be on a team that's a little bit weaker, but on top of that, it exposes how strong Xander is to the rest of the players, because he's carrying so many challenges and kind of all of the responsibility to carry the challenges on him. So people can look at him and be like, oh, he's a beast. Whereas if you're like a Danny and you're on a tribe with Nasir and Deshaun and Sydney and Evie, who are pretty strong challenge players, obviously Danny's a beast, but he doesn't look so responsible for the success of the tribe. And then Xander also is on the puzzle too. So it's like, okay, not only is he literally carrying his tribe through this challenge, he's also one of the smarter puzzle solvers.
And that's evidenced by the fact that these fools, the Leevu tribe, tried to throw challenges and they couldn't even, because they didn't tell everybody. So it's clear that even if, you know, two of your big players are slacking, this tribe is so big and strong, they can run through any tribe. Yeah. And, you know, despite the shuffle, they still got some big dogs. And again, those big dogs can kind of like, I guess, blend in a little more over there.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't forget Liana. She also looked pretty strong.
She's a beast. In that she's challenge. A beast.
Yeah.
No, she absolutely killed it. I am curious to know what you guys' thoughts of. I haven't really necessarily been following the girls, necessarily getting rid of the guys, but Deshaun and Danny are definitely.
Danny's on it.
Danny is very aware of the girls taking the lead, and he wants it to be a man strong. And I'm not mad at it in the sense, for me, it might protect Xander. But again, I've been saying this on the podcast since episode 2. Why are they so scared of Erica? I mean, unless are they going back and can they go to the future and see that she got this time? Like, because I'm just so confused at like the fact that they won't even give Erica a try. And I have to say, when Erica got sent over to that island, y'all know me, I'm emotional. I felt my sis's pain. I felt her. Like, if I were on that tribe, I would expect me to be going to that island. And when she said, I'm used to not being picked, I'm used to, like, I knew when I was standing next to Nasir that it was going to be me. That resonated with me a lot.
Here's the thing, though, and I totally agree with what you're saying. I think the decision in this episode was based on popularity. I do think they picked Nasir over Erica because they liked him more. But if I was in their shoes, to me, it's like, I'm sending someone to an island for 2 days. There's going to be some sort of advantage there. I almost have to trust that person to send them over. So it's like, that seems like a dynamic they didn't really consider. I don't know that how that necessarily would factor into my decision or your guys' decision, but I definitely feel you that it's tough for her. And I do think part of the reason that they might be a little wary of her, I think we saw a couple episodes ago, is that she's a very quiet player, yet she's shown a few times in her conversation with Deshaun, for example, that she is constantly thinking about the game. And I think quiet players who are really shrewd and clever and smart are a pretty dangerous factor in the game. But I don't know. I just think if you're sending someone away right at the merge, you know they're going to have an opportunity for an advantage, especially in a season like this where the advantage has been so, like, everyone knows there's crazy advantages this season. I feel like at this point, I feel like you'd almost want to send someone you trust. But I don't know if you guys were in the shoes of, say, a Danny or a Deshaun, and it's two of your former tribe members, Erica and Nasir, which one would you guys probably send, and like, what would your logic be?
Well, there's so much to it, because like you said, in the game of Survivor, you're going to believe that they're going out there to get something.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you're under the impression that the person that you send, they're not going to have immunity in this upcoming tribal council. Mm-hmm. So if you want to curry favor with an Erica, someone that you guys are like very shaky about, you save her. She's immune. You send over a Nasir. He's not immune, but that's your guy. So now it's like you have this group of people that you're about to go to the feast with, plus Nasir and whatever cells you have. Y'all as a huge group can then work on whoever you want.
Yeah, that's a good point, because we see Deshaun early in the episode saying like the Leevu six is not going to last, but he does want to keep them together for one vote. So isolating the person on your tribe that was probably in the worst position already, like you said, does not bode well for keep. I see very few, say this merge was a normal merge and they were going to a tribal with all 12 people. I do not see any way that the Leevu six themselves are staying like a full strong six.
Right. But Wendell, you say Nasir is your guy, but your guy multiple occasions has tried to get you out, has like tried to throw you under the bus. But this is the game of Survivor. You never know what bonds you and what things you have to outweigh or outlook to secure the trust of someone.
Yeah, but if we rewind a little bit, there was a time on the Luwu tribe when Nasir was like, this is earlier in the episode. Nasir's like, let's lock it in. This is the final six. Let's do it. And everyone else knew, again, like Deshaun was like, nah, there are cracks all over this tribe in his confessional. But Nasir keeps on, you know, preaching that. And although he has snitched on people in the past and whatnot, I think Nasir's
pretty loyal. I think he's loyal.
I would agree. So, yeah, where are we at?
We get to the merge feast and we have Evie, Danny, Nasir, Ricard, Deshaun and Sydney grubbing. They're feeling good. They're happy. They talk about how they really haven't been eating for days.
Mm.
Now this is where I question things at. For somebody that has played Survivor 11 days, the first challenge we played, I almost passed out. I'm confused as to how they are giving them no rights.
Yeah, it's crazy. Because even the losing group gets some rice and they're pumped up.
I just am like, oh, Jesus.
They said that some of them said they haven't eaten in a few days. Like, yo, you better go swim in that coral reef and spearfish some fish.
Yeah, I don't know how that wouldn't work for me. I might.
Do you guys remember when Xander's tribe a couple episodes ago won fruit at an immunity challenge? Apparently, Jeff offered them the opportunity to swap it for fishing gear and all the girls said no. And Xander was like super pissed. Mm. But to me, you got to have something, a sustainable food source out there. Obviously, I haven't been out there, I can't imagine, you know, how hard it would be without even having rice. Like, I don't know what you're eating. Coconuts.
And you got to be careful with them because they can dehydrate you and give you diarrhea.
Yeah.
The coconut water.
Yeah, there are some things out there, like there's the breadfruit on Ghost Island. We thought we got lucky. We found papaya trees, but they were unripened. So you can't eat an unripe. It doesn't. It's gross. But yeah, there's the breadfruit out there. If you can get those down, I'm sure Nasir. I think we saw Nasir throw stuff up to get it down. But yeah. So at the feast, they're happy. They're grubbing. They say they feel bad for Erica. That's when we get this confessional with Danny saying that like a woman has to go home. And it should be Erica.
If I'm not mistaken, Danny at one point says something sort of anti-woman within the game to a woman, right? Like he says like, oh, like we got to keep the guys around though. Did he do something like that?
I don't know what he said, but we've heard this kind of theme of Danny being scared of this woman's alliance or the women taking out the guys. We've heard it multiple times. So something will become of this.
Now, do you think it's anti-women or do you think he is really seeing guy after guy after guy? And he's like, I have to stop this trend. I need to.
Well, I don't mean anti-woman as in he's like, oh, I hate women. No. I just mean like he's like, oh, we got to get the women out. Although at this point, there's 12 people. It's 5 guys, 7 girls. Right. So it's not horribly imbalanced. But I don't think he's necessarily wrong with that observation.
Not horribly imbalanced, but one more guy. And it's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And especially going into the merge, a lot of times the big guys are the threats. So like, Danny, Nasir, Xander, I feel like naturally should be worried regardless of the gender ratio.
But you got somebody like Tiffany out there who listen, look like she changed her vote. So you might be good.
might be good. So we jump over to Exile, the Exile Beach.
OK, and I just got to say, y'all know I hate Exile Island.
Why is that?
I've never been a fan of Exile Island. I've never been a fan of Redemption Island. What was the island they were sending y'all on? Edge of Extinction? Edge of Extinction.
That got you more Underwood, though.
I mean, it did. I mean, but I just, but for me personally, I just always hated Exile Island.
Okay, well, Erica, at first, she didn't like it so much either, right? True, she gets out there. She gets a little bit of rice. She opens this big can thinking it might be something special. It's water. She gets some water. She flashes back to Canada and basically says that her family, they came from the Philippines. She didn't have the easiest life, but she thinks that all the things that her family has done for her, it kind of made her a stronger person. It made her who she is and allowed her to, you know, get out there and really work hard and make her way. She made fire out there.
Yeah, that was impressive that she got the fire going. Very important, too. Obviously, going there 2 days without a fire would be miserable.
It would. It would. Then we have the losers from the challenge. going back to what I like to call Mergatory.
Yeah.
Mergatory Beach. We have Xander, Shan, Heather, Leanna, and Tiffany going back to that beach.
Mm.
And that's when Shan decides to ask Leanna.
I was about to say, yeah.
I think it was just a slip by Shan. Shan's too tight, too sharp to do this.
Yeah.
But she's been starving. She just lost the challenge. She just lost her comrade Ricard to the other side, I guess, if you will. And she comes back and she asks Leanna, like, hey, did you get that advantage right in front of Tiffany?
I expect a lot more from Shan. Like you said, the situation is tough. Like, obviously, you're going to have some mental slips, but Shan is such a good player that it's like, how do you do that? I don't know.
Yeah. So she slipped up with that one. What do you think about that, Bryce?
I mean, I don't know. I was like, is this a JD Messi moment? I don't know. However, I also maybe feel like Leanna told Shan that one of her closest allies was Tiffany. So I'm thinking that Shan probably thought it was a safe space in that moment. But I think Leanna did a good job in the moment, because for me, I would have been like, I literally
like
would
red
have
light, green light.
I would have pretended like I was on FaceTime and just got, I would have been like,
now is not the turn. Yeah. So at that point, Leanna goes on a walk with Shan. She tells Shan exactly what the advantage is. And Shan's like, we need to lock in the alliance. And then Tiff and Leanna go on their little walk down to the water where they're rinsing shells, or they're doing something down there.
And Tiffany said, what did it say? Okay. And mind you, I ain't even mad at Tiffany.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they've been about, you know, keeping stuff and telling each other stuff, and they're locked in and the girls are tight and Xander's the one on the outs.
I do feel like Tiffany feels betrayed by Leanna. However, we as fans, what I see is kind of sort of like Leanna not like appeasing Tiffany, but like making Tiffany comfortable. So in my mind, I'm like, Leanna is absolutely right to have as many tentacles as she can out there. But I think it's interesting. And I also, the first thing that in my mind, I know Leanna wants to get Xander's vote out. I don't know why she want to come from my Zaddy's hand. But I also was like, if Shan wanted to get Ricard out, she could barter her trust back with him to be like, you know what? I thought about everything that we did. I want to give you the two votes back just because I want to show you that we are on good, whatever. And then boom, she could tell Leanna. Leanna could come in there, steal his extra two votes. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just saying, like, that could be an interesting, here he go, to shoot it down. Here he go. Come on.
Okay. No, you're burning Leanna's
advantage.
Steal her advantage just to get Ricard out, when I think there might be other ways to get him out, right? Okay, so essentially what you're doing is you're burning Leanna's advantage to give Leanna an extra vote, right? As opposed to having her use her advantage to steal something even more powerful like an item.
Okay, I just was trying. Okay.
It's not a bad idea, though, in a situation where getting Ricard to trust your group is like the most important thing in the vote, right? Because they could, if they wanted Ricard out straight up, they could just like steal Xander's extra vote and vote him out. But obviously, say Ricard comes across an idol or something and you need to lull him into some trust, that's when you can do something like that. I just think generally, though, these starting tribes need to stop cannibalizing each other. Like, Leanna and Tiff made up, it seemed like, after Leanna explained her advantage, but then Leanna's still like, all right, let's use it to get Xander out. And Tiff's like, chill out, Leanna. Like, also, I think the contrast between the way Tiffany handled Leanna not telling her about her advantage versus Xander not telling her about her advantage was pretty hilarious. Like, Leanna explains the advantage and Tiff's like, all right. And then Xander explains an advantage that everybody already knew about. Like, they had literally told Tiffany about it and she just didn't understand it. And then she's in the back, like, rolling her eyes. She's like, I don't trust Xander for shit. It's just a funny, but now I'm happy to see Tiff swinging over to Team Xander. She might have ordered a Zaddy calendar and now she's excited about working with Xander.
What I will say about that is when Xander was telling her and she was rolling her eyes, you have that moment. Then you have this moment by the beach where Leanna's kind of like coming clean, or whatever you want to call it. And they're both, to me, they're both acting, because then you get these two confessionals. You get the one where Leanna says Tiff is too charismatic and too friendly and she's a threat. Then you get Tiff saying that she doesn't necessarily like Leanna going at Xander or having this advantage. So now you have some tension between them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Bryce, what you got?
I agree. I feel like it's the cracks. They are crickety, crickety, cracking. It's cracking.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I understand that because you didn't swap, you've spent so much time with these people that some cracks might form, but also that probably serves to build more trust because you spent your whole time with them. If I'm someone on one of these minority tribes like Uwa or Yasa, and I see the cracks on the blue tribe, I think I'm going to put my differences aside for a few votes because none of the differences are necessarily like personal. You know, no one's like, I truly hate blank because they're just a bad person. It's just like, no, so-and-so has an advantage. We need to get them out. Someone has an advantage, leave them in the game, make that public information and make them a target that is in front of you. You don't have to target them because 12 people left in the game is still a lot of people, right?
Yeah. I just don't think that it has gotten that like cutthroat. It's still that like nice, friendly S.
On the surface.
I think it's,
yeah. Yeah.
But I think it's about to boil. I think the pot is cooking. The pot is cooking. The pot is cooking. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have the merge feasters coming back to camp after they had this wonderful meal. It's all hugs. You see Nasir telling Xander, hey, you're doing a really great job and I got your back, bro. And that could be a pretty cool.
This is the alliance I'm looking for. Zanseer supremacy. Let's go.
Oh. Zanseer supremacy.
Yeah. I mean, those are like kind of the two fan favorites right now. I feel like I'd love to see them work together. I also love it just because I think Nasir really is kind of a straightforward guy. I do think he has some chops. If it comes down to it, I think he'd be willing to cut somebody like a Xander. But I think if you're Xander, that you look at Nasir as someone you could really rock deep in the game with and kind of have him in your pocket a little bit. Someone who could be a target in front of you if you're Xander, just because Nasir is such a beast.
Yeah. So we're hoping to see that relationship blossom out there and to see them work hard together and shake things up.
Yeah.
We also get Danny telling Nasir and Xander, hey, let's keep it easy. When Erica gets back, he's still on this, you know, we're going to vote out a woman and it's going to be Erica thing. You get Sid, Evie and Tiffany walking off saying that Erica should go also. I think that was Sydney saying that. And then you get Shan, Liana, Deshaun, and Danny saying they should have an alliance but want to keep it on the low. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Okay. We seen the cookout on the big of the brother.
It's the camp out.
Okay. And we are potentially seeing a camp out. And I harp on things like this because I've never seen a majority Black alliance possibly happen in Survivor. And I know I've been seeing the critics, all the things that they've been saying on the Twitter, on the Reddit, all that stuff. But my thing is, before the 41 seasons, that has always been the majority of white alliances. Why? Like, that's never been an issue. So the fact that this opportunity is coming, and for somebody that loves the game like myself, and to honestly, like, never really conceptualize what it actually could look like, is it's just crazy. And to know that I had a small part in this, like, you know, changing the landscape so that there are plenty of people of color out there looking at this like, oh my God, this is amazing. We've never seen something like this. It's just so powerful, so great, so needed. I do think that the camp, I think the camp out is great. And I think the cookout is great. I do think the difference in a Survivor as to a Big Brother, I don't know how. Just with the strategy, the games, the idols, I think that it is, I'm talking just like if they were to be a dominating alliance, I do wonder how they will be able to maintain it just because I feel like Survivor and Big Brother is a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think in Survivor, they're coming from all these different tribes where they have pre-existing relationships that are going to continue to manifest themselves throughout the rest of the game. That's going to make things a little bit more complicated. Whereas Big Brother, from week one, you make that alliance. It's pretty easy to stick to that. Whereas now, you know, like I said, over in Survivor, there's a bunch of other relationships. And I think just the cutthroat nature of the game is going to make it harder. Plus, you add in idols, advantages, everything. But it's great to see a group come together like that. And I think the thing that both the cookout and the camp out have done quite well. And, you know, obviously there's people complaining about stuff online like, oh, it's racist, etc. I think if you're coming together with a group saying like, hey, we're similar, let's work together. I think that's a very positive approach. Now, if you're coming together and say like, hey, we don't like these other people, let's get them out. That's where there's a problem. But I don't think the cookout or the camp out have come anywhere near doing that. So I think right now it's positive. And then, yeah, of course, just the dynamic is so much more complex here in Survivor, where it's not going to be as easy to run the game as it was in Big Brother. So I think it's not going to be as huge of a factor as it was in Big Brother. So it's just good to have it going on the side and see where it goes.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff online. I have people that are still commenting on my post, and I just stopped responding. But we heard Deshaun say that he didn't think he was going to play with a lot of Black people. Mm-hmm. And he gets out there, and this cast is a rainbow of a cast, and there are multiple Black people, two of whom were already voted out, you know. And but fortunately, post merged, there are 12 people and 4 Black people remaining. So 4 out of 12 isn't the majority, first of all. But you have these 4 people with that commonality. And he said, as long as it's not one of us, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean I'm targeting a particular group. That means, hey, yo, let's look out for each other.
Let's look out for each other.
We saw us getting picked off season after season early in the game on numerous casts for numerous shows. Hey, let's do something about it. Let's work together. And in my opinion, it's a beautiful thing. Like I said, there are 4 of them out of 12 people on the island. There's a lot of eyes on them. But earlier I said, you see Sid, Evie, and Tiffany walk off to talk about who should go. Those are, if I'm not mistaken, 3 white women walking off. We've seen this numerous times and you never say, oh, that's 3 white this, that's 3. Yeah. No, you don't say that. Because these people of color are sitting together on the beach. Now everyone is focused on, oh, they're no, like let them play their game and let them look out for each other in a game that really hasn't looked out for them.
Exactly. I mean, it's like if I end up out on the island and there's 3 other people that go to my school, that go to my college, you're obviously gonna be like, yo, let's keep an eye out for each other. So I think what they're doing is obviously it's a good thing. And I do think for those concerned about another cookout sort of situation where they just dominate the game, I think this alliance has so many strong players in it that as the game progresses, I don't see Deshaun and Shan wanting to sit next to each other. So there's going to be some throat cutting going on. So just to have this alliance established, and it's a third of the group, it's not going to be anything crazy, but it's going to be good for them to have an eye out for each other.
I'll say I hope to see them in the final 4, but I can't see it, man. Just like I couldn't see Shannon and Ricard in the final 2. This is 4 powerhouse people. Like I want to see them go to the end together because of the optics and the beautiful representation that it would be. And the more people that would see that and want to play and dream big and dream about getting on this show,
the 3Ds.
Yeah, the 3Ds. But again, these are some heavy hitters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can we just take a time to appreciate during the challenge after the boulder, they had to turn to the human stair ladder. Then they had to scale the wall. Baby, Danny said, let me take 2 steps back. And it just looked like he just was like, now for me, I was like, okay, Danny, okay. But also I was thinking, like, if I was out there, I'd be like, he gotta go. Like, I mean, like, is it going to be a when we get to the end, is he going to be like a challenge piece? But I don't know. But that's the thing I was thinking. Then the other thing that I came to my mind was at the merge piece. Ain't nobody looking for an idol. Don't they people normally have the idols?
They probably had their eyes open.
Yeah. You're taking this somewhere I wanted to end up in this conversation, though, Bryce, about, I guess, people's, you know, chances of winning. You're talking about Danny, who I don't think he has a great shot of winning because he is such a threat. And I don't know if his social and strategic game is enough to cover it. But I just wanted to talk about with you guys, you know, who are some people you really have your eyes on as a potential winner? I'll kick it off. I think Deshaun right now is my guy. I think he's got the complete package. He has allies that are good shields for him, like a Danny. He obviously has this all Black alliance going on that'll be of good help. And just looking at Luvu, who obviously never went to tribal, he for me was kind of always the figurehead of that tribe. He was sort of the one who always had his hand in all the different pots that knew exactly what was going on. And I think he's set up super well in this merge to be in that same situation.
If you talk Edgic or any of that stuff, is he
looking good, or do you know any?
I don't pay attention to a whole lot of Edgic. I think he's looking fine. I mean, to me, like I said, he came across to me as the main character on that Luwu tribe, or at least the best player. Obviously, it's a little harder to tell when they didn't go to a single tribal council because they didn't do a whole lot of blatant strategizing or scheming. So I don't know how that would translate Edgic wise, but just from a skill standpoint, I do see Deshaun as a really good contender. I don't see a lot of other Luwu players as super strong contenders, I'd be honest with you. And then, of course, Shan and Ricard have both been crushing it, but I think they're both just a little bit too obviously strong players, if that makes sense. And then over on the Yellow Tribe, I think Evie's playing really well. I think Xander's playing well, but he's just so constantly been an underdog that if he somehow pulls out a win, it would be pretty insane.
Yeah, he reminds me of Michael Jurger from our season, just somebody that kept on getting the crap beat out of him, like every challenge after challenge, and just kept coming back and like just kept his head up, willing to compete, ready to compete again. Mm-hmm. And he's still in it. And in our season, it took us a lot to get Jurger out. And Xander it's going to take a lot to get him out, especially with all he has in his pocket.
Exactly. Now, Liana knows about those and she has her advantage, but I have seen people talking about, hey, maybe Liana decides to use that advantage on someone like Nasir. Cause of course, right now, Liana is kind of anti Xander, but we've also seen her talking confessional. Like, it's not about who you trust. It's about who trusts you. And it seems like she does realize that Xander doesn't view her in a negative light at this point in the game. It seems like Xander is pretty keen on keeping the Yellow Tribe together. So maybe the Yellow Tribe can set aside their differences and Liana will hopefully spare Xander and let him keep it as advantages. So obviously Xander with an extra vote, an idol, and just a really good, well-rounded challenge strength, I'm hoping he can make it deep in the game. But again, from a more meta standpoint as well, season 41, it's kind of a new era of Survivor, and just the whole diversity push and everything. I do think it's tough for a straight white man to be the winner of this season. And we've seen players kind of have that perspective on Xander a little bit. So I think he's been playing super well, but I just don't know if he's going to be able to make it all the way there and win over the cast as to why he'd be deserving to win. But I think he's playing strong. I'm obviously rooting for him, but right now Deshaun for me is the guy.
Is there any scenario where Xander sits at the end and he beats the two people he's sitting next to?
I think right if it's now. Like, yeah, I fully think so. I mean, if it's him, Tiffany, and Heather, I mean, now is that a trio he gets to the end with? I don't know. I mean, right now he's kind of ally-less in a sense, like other than the guys coming to him. He doesn't really have anyone right now that wants to go deep with him. Is there a scenario where it could be a Xander, a Nasir, and like a Heather, maybe? And maybe Xander wins that. Although I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
It there's a lot of game left to be played. Mm-hmm. So it truly depends on how people play. And I could see, like, if Xander turned into a superstar going forward with all that he has. Yeah, I think that these people will judge the person that sits at the end on their merits and how they play the game.
He's just got such a target, though. He's a beast, you know? Like, if I was out there, I'd say, because at first he did come across very strong in the first few episodes as someone who's like, oh, he's very honest with the whole tribe. He's kind of just like, he's kind of a Fabio where we can just trust him for his word. But now I think he's proving that he's got a little bit more up his sleeve. Combine that with his athleticism, I think it's going to be hard. But I also do think, just from edit wise and skill, I wouldn't predict Xander to go, you know, imminently, because you look at the layout of the merge. He does, like we said, he doesn't have a lot of allies coming in, but I do think he'll be able to connect well with some of the other tribes. Some of the guys will be looking out for him. Hopefully Erica, we haven't even gotten to the talking about Erica's advantage yet, but hopefully that will keep him and the rest of that group safe for one round. But yeah, I just think, and I would love to hear if you had to pick one person, who would you pick? But yeah, for me, it's Deshaun. He has so many cards up his sleeve. I feel like he hasn't had to reveal any of them yet, right? He hasn't gone to try. He's got a large network of connections, but yeah, who would you guys predict right now?
Well, I think about the past seasons, but again, like you said, this is a new season of Survivor, and the edit doesn't necessarily have to be similar to what we've seen in the past, where whoever gets a bunch of confessionals and narrates the season is going to get pretty far in the season. It could be something where, you know, somebody who was just very likable and had the right connections is going to get to the end. I'd love to see Deshaun win. He seems like a great guy. He's very smart. The man is a med student. Like,
I'd love to see that. Again, like you said, Shan, she gets a lot. She's very visible. She's like,
I think the narrator of the season. Think she's had the most. I think someone says she's had the most confessionals through a pre-merge since Russell Hantz.
Is that a good comparison though?
No, I'm not saying she's like Russell Hantz. I'm just saying screen time wise.
They've been to Tribal. They've been to Tribal 1,000 times.
Oh yeah. I know. I think Shan's been giving great content. I have no problem with the screen time she's gotten. I just think, especially because they went to Tribal so much and she played so well in that pre-merge. I just think it's so hard to sustain that level throughout the rest of the merge. And we see her already slipping up a little bit.
And she's one of two. Of her original tribe going to emerge with hella numbers of other tribes. I'd love to see a Liana win.
I'd love to see a Ricard win, to be honest.
I like Ricard too.
I'm not mad at him at all. I love his villainistic look on things. I like that he is leaning into that. And sometimes the jury will respect your gameplay.
I think Ricard has been one of my favorite like villains to watch in recent memory. I think he's, like I said, I think he's an evil genius. I think some of the moves he's made have been so smart that like people might not have even thought of them in the first place, let alone execute them. But as a player, if I was in the game with Ricard, just the vibe I get through the screen, I don't know if that's someone I'd actually really want to work with. And I feel like a lot of people out there would probably relate to that. He sort of just has an air of like confidence and like a kind of a holier than thou vibe. Maybe I'm off with that, but he doesn't seem very approachable. It's just my thing.
I don't know. I sometimes feel like that's a stereotype that they use on the gay man. It's like, oh, you can't trust him. I wouldn't want to like, so I try to like look past that and like, yes, he's playing a devious game, but I feel like there have been people that like, I don't know. We are not seeing the whole edit and I do feel like you can connect with him. I don't know. I don't choose to.
He's been playing great. I'd love to see him win because the way he's been playing has been phenomenal. I'm just wondering like how likely it is. Yeah. But it's so like you guys said, there's so much game left though. It's hard to predict. But obviously there's some people that are early favorites and some people that are probably not going to take the crown.
Hear from
Heather.
Who's the older lady on the other tribe?
Heather. She has not been. Fuck it. Maybe Heather's going to win the season.
No, right. Right.
Pencil that
take. You heard it first. Jack Atkins says Heather is going to win the season.
Yeah, it's a new era of Survivor. Whoever gets the least screen time, it will be winning the season.
They're really getting us. So finally, in the last scene we see, Erica's on Exile. Bryce hates Exile. Erica's on Exile. Probst pulls up in his jet.
Oh.
In his boat, not his jet. See, I'm tired from water, basketball.
Got his sneakers wet.
Jump right in the water, sits down with her, kind of takes her pulse, sees how she's doing. And he pulls out an hourglass. He says you can change He says you can change history by smashing this hourglass. And if you smash this hourglass, we will go back in time. And the winner of the immunity from the merge challenge will become the loser. And the loser will become the winner. And you, the person who had to be, I guess, the person that was sent over here, who does not have immunity right now, you'll also get immunity if you smash the urn.
It's horrible. It's so bad. Like from a entertainment value, it was an okay couple of minutes. But if you look at it gameplay, it's horrible. Like it's such an obvious choice for Erica that it's like what the thing I've liked about the advantages this season is that they've pretty much all come with some sort of dilemma. Some of them have been too punishing for taking advantage. We see Xander, the whole premier, doesn't have a vote. I see four reasons why Erica should change the history and zero reasons why she shouldn't. One, you're safe. Duh. Two, you've missed out on 2 days of the merge where people have been plotting without you.
And they have been plotting on Yoga.
They have been plotting. Three, you're aware of the fact that you're on the bottom of your old tribe. And then four, from the preview, it appears that when Erica gets to the challenge, Jeff kind of lays out her dilemma. If Jeff's like, hey, Erica, you have the opportunity to save all of these people that are vulnerable. And she's like, nah, not going to do that. I'm going to join them and be vulnerable with you. If I was one of those vulnerable people, I'd be like, what the fuck? I'm going to vote you out. Like, why would you? So can either of you think of a reason why she shouldn't? Okay. And before you say that, it's also like, it's so obvious that she should change the course of history. Once she does that, it's like, what was the point of the whole episode? Like, what was the point of winning the challenge? Now you're just like, you won the challenge fair and square. And then due to this twist that literally has no like drawbacks, you're just like, suddenly have to get a tribal. Like,
I don't mind it. Again, me being a early boot, me being somebody that is consistently counted out, me that is an underdog, I love it. Like, you think you're safe and you think that you're about to tell me I'm going home. Guess what? Guess what? The game has changed. I love it. And so say what y'all want, but listen, baby boy is going back in time.
But you think Erica will use it, Bryce?
I mean, I think this is what I would say. If she does not, she deserves to go home.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course Erica is going to use it. But I'd say if there were a reason for her not to use it, it's because her whole previous tribe is about to feel the wrath of
and
that.
And as they should.
But I almost think like at that point, if I'm Erica, I could be like, yo, like, you guys have the numbers in this group. Like, you guys aren't fucked unless you fuck each other over. Just vote together. Whereas she could be like, hey, if I went over to the losers with Heather, one of us might go home. So I know what you're saying, but like, yeah. Also, if you already know you're on the bottom of your tribe, but I agree with you. You have to, when you're weighing out that situation, you have to weigh out all the pros and the cons. And I guess one of the cons is that you are like widening the gap more with the people that already don't like you very much. But I just think it's time for Erica. And I think she realizes it, that to pivot to some other people in this game.
For sure. I got a question. It looked like in the next time on Survivor, they were lined up for a challenge and she was standing there about to say it. So is there going to be some kind of a challenge for those people? Is there going to be?
So how it's supposed, if time doesn't get reversed, the vulnerable players, which would include Erica, compete for individual immunity before going to tribal. And then I believe that everybody gets to vote at tribal, but only the vulnerable players can be voted out. Now, if she reverses history, the winning group, the group that feasted, will be doing the challenge for one individual immunity.
Now, I thought it would have been cool for this twist to happen where she's not announcing it there or something like that, where there is no challenge. When they go to tribal, she announces it, which side is immune. Because then at tribal, now people are like,
no, but listen, all she got to do is say, I did rock or paper.
But then for the challenge, then what? I mean, I think that could work. And then you just have everybody compete in the immunity challenge. And maybe if you win and you were already safe, you have the option to give it away. And then if the fate is changed, then obviously you just hang on to it.
Yeah, I was just finding a cooler way to use this terrible advantage, actually.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Although then those players wouldn't really have time to strategize. Like, imagine you go to tribal and you're like, oh, I'm safe. And then all of a sudden it flips. And you're like, what? Like,
I like it. It's the game of Survivor.
I just hate seeing it. It is the game of Survivor, but it's just like the more people can get screwed over, the less I like it, you know?
Well, I mean, I got screwed over, so, and I still like it. So I love it. I do.
So, okay. So then we've looked at the past. Let's predict the future a little bit. So we have Erica. She's going to use the advantage. Hopefully. And that means that Evie, Danny, Nasir, Ricard, Deshaun, Sydney will then be competing against each other. Evie, Danny, Nasir, Ricard, Deshaun, Sydney in individual immunity.
Then I think either Deshaun, Nasir, or Danny are going to win, and I think Evie might be in trouble.
Wait a minute. You don't think Sydney can win?
I mean,
whatever it is.
I think Sydney can win.
Maybe.
It looks like a endurance sort of thing. And
well, that is true. That is
if they're holding on a pole, if they're standing between something, if they're, you know, I don't count Sydney out either.
No, okay, you're right. I mean, mind you, she is a beast.
But with that being said, I do agree with you, Bryce. I think, I mean, there's what, four original Luvu and then one Uwa, one Yasa. I do think, although if everybody is voting in the tribal, for a Luvu.
I mean,
Erica obviously already is sort of signaling that she's flipping. And then of course the Luvu in the losers group are going to have to vote for each other potentially. So I could see a situation where it is like a Sydney or even a Danny. Actually, I could very well see going home.
Well, okay. There are six Luvu left, right?
Mm.
So that's half the group.
Mm.
And if they just went based on Luvu, then they could target a Sydney, Ricard, or Evie. So like if
well, Sydney's on Luvu as well.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. So
get him.
If excuse me, Bryce.
Do you even know Survivor, Wendell? You would never win a season.
Bryce brings his buddy on the pod because Bryce can't compete with me. But anyway, so okay. If we have Danny, Nasir, Deshaun, and Sydney all Luvu, and they stick together, we have Ricard and Evie on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I forgot that Ricard is on. Ricard might be going home.
He would be a merge boot. Like, I could see him as a merge boot because merge boot.
I could see that too because, I mean, so, but like I said, if everyone's voting, it could change the dynamic. But I do think Luvu's target would probably be, I think it would be better for Luvu to target Evie. She has more connections, but I think there's going to be more pushback to target Evie because players like Tiffany, Xander, Liana aren't going to want Evie to go. Whereas I think they could all agree like, all right, Ricard can be the merge boot. But if you're the group that's now safe and you're Xander, Erica, Liana, uh-huh. Tiffany, Heather, now's your time though that you can't go home. Maybe it's better to just, instead of compromising and sending home Ricard, why not just get together and send home a Luvu?
But how can you get together if there are still six Luvu?
But I think Erica would join you.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
I could see a world where it's Xander, Evie, Tiffany, Liana, and then Shan and Ricard, and then they pull in Erica to vote out Danny. I think totally Danny would forgot. Be the target.
Totally forgot Erica. She's going to be the wild card. Yeah.
I even think Nasir, I could, well,
I don't know. Cause it depends.
I just think because so many Luvu are vulnerable that I think they're more likely to lose a member because it is six Luvu, six non-Luvu. And now with so many non-Luvu being safe, it's like, why not shoot your shot right now? You can't go home. Even if it ties, you can't go home unless Jeff has something up his sleeve.
Yeah. It's definitely a lot to the naysayers that have not been enjoying the season. I don't know what y'all problem is because it's juicy. And I definitely think that the next week's episode, the pot is about to be stirred and we is definitely cooking. Okay. We cooking on the island. Cooking on the island. Cook. On the island. But yes, it was so much fun to break down this week's episode with Jack Atkins and Wendy Z Holland. I appreciate you guys so much for coming on. Who knows? Maybe we got to do this trio again. But yes, what's popping with y'all? Anything y'all want to shout out before we are out?
Go ahead, right. Wendell.
Okay. Bryson Wen presents Philadelphia. Hey. It's a homecoming. November 17th, grab your tickets. Tickets are in the links in both of our bios. That's going to be a good one. And that's what I got.
What you got, Emily?
No major plugs out here, Bryce, but just super excited to be back on. Looking forward to, if you'll have me, looking forward to coming through again and talking some Survivor. I also just noticed you got the fireplace roaring in the background. I love to see that. So, but it's great seeing both of you. I mean, it's been an exciting season. I'm so excited to see what happens and what unfolds during the rest of the merge. So
yes, definitely. Maybe we'll see you in person. Who knows? But thank you for tuning in this week. Make sure you guys go to that YouTube page, Bryce Isaiah, and watch this video so you can see the baby boys in action. We are out.
Keeping the menu rolling. Keeping the menu rolling. Keeping the menu rolling. Keep it rolling.
And we are back this week. Listen, we didn't got through a whole season of Potomac with my girl, Jatia Hart Taylor. Welcome back to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm finally, you know, getting over my hangover from Karen's wedding. Oh my gosh, it was such an event. I loved it. Thank you for the invite, Karen.
How did you do going up those steps?
Oh my gosh, I almost tripped. I hate steps. I like everything on one level. But no, I actually do not like steps either. I'm a one level person.
Yeah, I'm with me. I like all my ish on one level. You have planned an amazing wedding when you got married. You got married at the zoo in Florida, and it was very spectacular. I love the fact that we got to kind of sort of like roam the zoo. What were your thoughts of like the outside of like the venue at Kara's wedding? Does it matter if the inside is spectacular is what I'm asking?
You know, it's funny because this was the same issue with Candy's wedding. Like it was in
No, this was not the same issue as Candy's. Candy's wedding. Candy's wedding was ugly outside and inside.
What? But it was fab. You know, it was it was aiming for fabulous. So no, because it was a totally inside wedding. So yeah, I mean.
But my question is, does the outside aesthetic, even if it's an inside wedding, does that matter?
Could have been better, yes.
Okay.
Yes, it could have been better. I mean, but also you have to think about, this was like not a first wedding. I don't know if that makes sense. Like,
a vow renewal.
A vow renewal. So I don't know. Had it been a regular party, which is kind of like what I place a vow renewal as. But let's be honest. I mean, Karen is stepping it up. This was, do you remember season one ended on a party at her house?
I remember several parties at Karen's house.
Correct, right? So we had the singing guy who, ooh, and that was horrible. Oh my
she
God.
She is back to Potomac. The queen is back to Potomac.
Yeah, so it was all a mess. But, you know, usually Karen is okay, but, you know, this was kind of a little subpar for me. Okay. I think I like the one that had the Indian theme the best.
Yes, yes. That was at their Great Falls home.
Right. That was the season one finale.
I enjoyed that. Yes. Well, it might be season one or season two. Because I knew it was in their new house, but it was in the new house that didn't have furniture. So I think that was the one that was like not in Potomac. Definitely the season finale just aired. I loved it, but I do want to just go back to the episode before the season finale, since we didn't get to touch on it. Not much was really, like, you know, in that episode.
It was just a build up, basically.
Correct. There were two things for me that stuck out the most in the episode was Giselle's conversation with her daughters.
Oh, yes. Oh. It felt like it's very interesting that her daughters pulled on the same themes that the other women pull on about her being like emotionally unavailable. And I think what really resonated was them saying that, you know, we don't have a model for a good relationship, and that's really going to affect them.
Yeah, I sometimes think about my own life, and like, you know, when they were saying to their mom, like, they don't remember Giselle and Jamal ever being married. I don't remember my mom and dad ever being married. Like, my mom and dad were married. They had three children. I was the last. But when I grew up, like, my mom and dad weren't married. They didn't have a great relationship. So that really resonated with me when the girls were saying that. And it also made me think, like, I wonder how that plays into like my current dating life.
Yeah, I don't know. So fortunately, my parents were married. Love that. And it's funny because my mom was my dad's third wife. So, you know, it was a couple of tries, but, you know, and he had a lot of children. So I think I had the benefit of his experiences. But I think that's definitely like my parents' relationship, and even like my older sisters and brothers' relationships have really shaped the way that I have approached relationships. So, yeah, that is going to affect them. I mean, but you know what? You never know. It can go either way. They
right.
could really be like, you know what? I see what happened to my mom and my dad, and I'm not going to repeat those mistakes. Or they could fall right in line with those mistakes. So it might be a positive learning lesson, might not. So, but I applaud them for discussing it in a mature manner and not glossing over that matters.
Absolutely. And the thing about it is that I feel like in some instances, the ladies bring this up to Giselle, but she automatically gets defensive, or it's in a like sly, smart kind of remark. But when Giselle's daughters bring these issues to her attention, her guard is down. And we get to see a different Giselle. And I'm living for the vulnerability. And I think that, you know, for a long time, Giselle has had to have this wall up. And which is why probably she is so shady, because it really is a defense mechanism.
I'm sure she's had to, you know, block a lot of people hating on her marriage and her husband and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm sure it's been a whole bunch of nasty church ladies that, you know, came for her. So I think she had to develop thick skin in the relationships that she's had, unfortunately. But You can't have thick skin when it comes to your kids, honey. That child, I don't care nothing about that thick skin.
No, for sure. And I definitely think that it is in every aspect of her life and her relationships, the relationships with her girls and the relationships with the girls of like the housewives. So I just thought that was like a really interesting, and I always love Giselle's openness with her daughters. Sometimes I do feel like she shares a bit too much with them, but that's her relationship with them. I get it, and I really like to see it.
I like to see it. I think they're sweet little girls. One of them, you know, pray for her when she get on the road, but you know, that those are things that can be overcome.
Another thing that I thought was interesting in the second episode was we got to see a little bit of Juan Dixon. We haven't really seen much of Juan Dixon. And it, you know, I guess they went on a double date, Juan and Robin.
No, Juan was not with Robin. Juan was with his boyfriend.
Okay, so listen, it's weird. Okay, the Michael, like, I'm all for bromance.
Juan and Michael were on a date, and they brought their wives.
And yeah, it's weird. I don't know how else to put it. I do like the fact that it seems like Juan has Michael's back, and at least he is like reciprocal of the relationship.
Yeah, I think it's cute, and it's clearly
it's a little weird.
But that's okay. I'm here for it. But I do like that it's, you know, it seems like Juan gives a lot more. I mean, well, sorry, Michael gives a lot more to the relationship. But Juan also reciprocates it.
No, for sure. And that is the part that makes it funny. But it was also just interesting to see that they keep talking about these kids. Now, mind you, y'all know I got the tea of the tea of the tea. They keep talking about this third child. Now, when Robin was on Watch What Happens Live about a month ago, baby, the rumors were swirling. That Miss Robin had a baby bump. And when we saw the reunion photos, it looked like she did a good job of like hiding it. But I would not be surprised if Miss Dixon, her storyline for season with 7 would be that she is pregnant.
I think the bun
is already in the oven. Okay, hot take.
It's not my decision, but child, okay now, honey.
Yeah,
it's been down that road. I mean, okay. Look. It's diverse situations.
It has been. I mean, I don't know. We just don't see enough of their relationship. And what we do see is not always great. So when they went to, when Michael and Juan were on their double date with their wives, you know, they talked about the baby. And, you know, Robin was just like, well, hopefully this time will be different. Because, like, you know, in the beginning, Juan was not there to support me. And I basically heard what she was saying. Like, you know, I had to carry the load on my own. Like, and what most mothers do. And the conversation carried over to when Robin got a space for embellished. She looked like a it wasn't the fancy one that we saw. It was very given like storage unit, but you know, a space of its own. And the conversation came up again, and Juan was not here for it. He was not here for so much. He was like, I'm tired of you making me look like a dick on camera. And he stormed off.
Baby, we can't make you look like something you ain't.
Okay. And Robin is only, so here's the thing, I was with Robin until when they got to the car and Juan was, we got to hear a little bit of Juan's side of the story. And Juan was saying, like, I hate when you say that because it makes it seem as if I'm a bad dad or I was not there for my kids. And he's like, that was 13 years ago. He's like, people grow, people change. But you know how I feel about the kids. And we clearly see throughout the season, Juan is the one that's raising the kids because Robin in the bed.
Well, I guess what he meant to say is at the time he wasn't, I mean, a bad dad, no, but you just were not showing the responsibilities. And I do understand where he's coming from. Like, that was our agreement. If that's what y'all agreed to, then don't, you know, you can't complain about it. And it seemed like that's what she agreed to. Just saying.
I mean, listen, and he's like, it's always what I didn't do. It's never what Robin didn't do. And I was just like, ooh,
what did she do? I want to know more.
Listen,
I don't know. She didn't do. I guess maybe get out of the bed. I don't know.
But listen, he was serious. He didn't roll the window up on her arm.
I thought that was a little dickish. I mean, like, if you want to talk about being a, looking like a dick on camera, then don't do that. Like, I don't know. To me, if you don't want to look like an a-hole on camera, just go away and don't say anything. But the more you say and the more that you give them to work with on camera, no matter what, the more they can use and you look like a a-hole. Like Candace.
Right. And so, again, I do... The fact that they keep saying that they are not planning a wedding because of the pandemic, and that, you know, they're building a house.
The wedding, because he's really
like,
that interested.
Yeah, like that's what I'm getting, and I'm just like, ugh. But listen, here's the thing: I'm not married. I don't have no man. Like, marriage is just a piece of paper. It's about the foundation of the relationship that you have. So I'm not out here judging nobody if it work.
I don't feel like you have to be married to have a good relationship. But I know me and my husband had this conversation. He's European, you know, they do the life partner thing and, you know, a lot of times do not get married. But for me, I told him, you know, he just wanted to go straight to the kids part. And I was like, that's not an option for me because I'm a black woman. And, you know, there is a certain kind of stigma that goes with not being unmarried and having kids. And also, there are very great legal and financial issues that come with being married. And I want those. Thank you, tax break. Thank you, child tax credit. Thank you, filing jointly. Thank you, credit. You know, all these kind of things.
It's a thank you credit.
Thank you for joint credit is what
I'm
saying.
Oh, okay. Right? I was like, oh, child, I never get the thank you credit.
You got to get married to get it. No.
Oh, child.
So, I mean, there is a reason that people get married. Sometimes, you know, it's for love. Sometimes it's literally to become economically more attractive and viable. And there are certain things that come with it. That's why people do it. That's why people have gotten married for centuries. And so it's funny to me, but yes, part of it was about love. Part of it was about being a black woman who got married. But part of it was by that money. I mean, like, come on. Me and my husband had this discussion. I was like, look, I'm trying to stack paper and retire.
So you're with the grand dom with marriage being an institution.
Correct.
Okay.
I am.
Okay, listen, I ain't mad. Well, hopefully I will be invited to the 25-year renewal of you and Graham.
Now, you see, when the dom needed to lend the black Bill Gates some money, she didn't have to do all that because they was married. She just transferred to the account. It wasn't a problem. She paid them, you know?
Well, I mean, were they coming after him? Well, was it because that they were married and this was a business? They was coming at the business and not after her jointly?
I don't know, but I'm sure his 25-year-old side chick would, 25-year side chick wasn't going to lend him the damn money. How about that?
Oh, well, you think Karen's ding, ding. Trainer would have?
Ding, ding. Now, I'm just saying, if you got a 20, if you've been married for 25 years, you can have that conversation. If you've been side chicking somebody for 25 years, they ain't going to help you bail you out. It's my
well, Pennsylvania, where
marriage, ding, ding.
Pennsylvania, where I live, is a what do they call it?
If you've been living property or whatever. Oh, common law.
Common law. Do that still hold? Do you still get a thank you credit with that?
I don't know, but you can have a common law, but you have to like claim it. So you have to claim each other.
Okay, all right, y'all. I mean, listen, I'm still on the road to getting a text back. Well, actually, I should say a text back because, you know, I went on a blind date, but I ain't even going to talk about it on here. But listen, so, you know, who knows
we don't get the ding ding.
I mean, because it ain't really nothing. Because I don't even want to talk about this blind date that
but
happened
you
at the
are,
price that
so
went present.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, where you a snack, you a snack. Okay. No. But anyway, let's get into this final episode, which was really all about the Grand Dame 25 years of institution celebration.
So I have to say this episode, oh my gosh, why nobody titties was fitting in a dress? Good God.
Well, listen. Let's get there. But
it
we also...
Titties to the left and titties to the right and titties in the middle. Oh, Lord Jesus.
And sparkly sneakers. Candace signed her record deal on this episode. And what I thought was so funny is that, like, as she's signing the record deal, you know, Chris and her mom are there and she's just saying, like, she couldn't have done it without Chris's support. She couldn't have done it without her mom back. And I thought that it was interesting because when they were signing the contract, they were talking about the social media rollout.
Okay, so this is the I love that the man was like, yeah, your Twitter is a mess. I was like, thank you. Somebody please just tell her that, like, it's a mess and you can't be acting like that. So you know what was really funny? They came into the office and I really just had, like, flashbacks of Sheree in the attorney's office.
Who gonna check me, boo? That one?
Oh, my gosh. I was like, ooh, this is either gonna go really well or it's gonna be a you who gonna check me, boo? Because I did not expect that when she came in to talk business that it was just gonna go straight to Ratchet.
Yeah, that was an iconic scene, and we do know that the Housewives of Atlanta are currently filming, and Sheree is back as a full-time housewife, and we can confirm that Marlo is filming as a full-time peach holder. Well,
so was Escala.
Oh, so I don't know if Escala was I don't know if she was filming as a full time or filming as a.
I'm dual. Sure she was. She was filming.
She was filming, but she didn't say it was. They didn't say you was holding the thing. They ain't say you was holding the thing.
I'm sure they got some footage of her holding the thing. Look, I'm sure they got some footage of her holding the thing and being in the dress for the promo.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No.
What's your little side shady blog saying?
What I do know from my blogs is that when they record the peach or the whatever you holding, like that's how you, like they don't do any like that's how you know you. A housewife, okay?
Okay.
So that was interesting just to see Candace, and you know, kudos to her, full circle, getting a record deal, or I don't know if it's a record deal, it's more so giving me like a 360 type of distribution deal.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was kind of interesting. I was like, okay, well, y'all already produced the things.
What did you write?
Okay.
But I mean, that is the, I hear good things about 360s and I also hear not so great things about 360s. So I would hope that, you know, Dorothy hired the right people to ensure, you know, the good things. Because the good thing about the 360 is you do have a backing of a label. They are going to handle the promotion. They are going to handle the rollout. They are going to handle like a lot of the business aspects of it. And you as the artist have to show up with the products. And as we see, she's budgeting her own videos, she's recording on her own, so it's like a joint venture in sense, even though the record label make a lot more money than you do, but still to have that backing is great, and it was really good to see that. And then we really just focus more so on the wedding. Now, this is what I was confused about. As they're planning for the Grand Dame's wedding, her son and Raven were supposed to walk her down the aisle, and then they're like, Raven's not feeling well. They think it might be kidney stones.
Yeah.
Maybe she could have possibly had, like, COVID. They didn't want to say. But I was just like, they kind of sort of think, like, you would know if you're, like, I don't know. It was just so weird about not having Raven there.
Yeah, I really liked her. I like her son, too, but Raven is so funny. She's, like, the perfect mix of Ray and Karen. It's, like, yes. The dark-skinned, more petite Karen. I don't know. It's kind of, I really like her as a...
I like Raven. I like her personality.
Yeah, as a child, real housewife child, so...
She's more low-key. She doesn't like to be in front of the cover, although in front and center, although she does try to wage at her mom's housewife for deals and different things, word on the street is. But also, what I
why
got was like,
not? Why,
I mean, why I mean,
you leave on housewives if you can't leverage it for stuff? That sounds like the move, honey. Go on, Raven. Work. Sorry.
Well, I need to get Barb on something then. Shoot.
I'm about to say, can we start a real senior housewives? And okay. Put mamas on there because I'd work me a deal.
I'm here for it. It definitely seems like Karen's son wanted no parts of anything. Like, I don't know if he's just like, and he's always been very like awkward on camera, but he definitely appeared to like want no parts of any of this. I don't know if maybe with his job, he doesn't like to be associated with the housewives, but he gives me very much like, I want to do the least on camera.
I got those vibes as well. So, I don't know. But, you know, he was there. He was supporting his mom. I appreciate that. He really should have walked her down the steps because she was...
I mean, yeah, child.
She was on Les Struggle Boosts. Okay. I'm trying to get down the stairs. I mean, like, we had to see the inside of her hoop skirt and all that. And, like, it wasn't fitting already. It was cinched and not in a good way. It was cinched, like, giving me COVID ribs, cinched. I don't know what was going on.
It was the back. It was the back, like, you know, little over. Side. Just a little bit. And I don't understand, like, again, my issue with the venue is that, okay, the main dance floor and dinner is downstairs, but upstairs is the cocktail party. And then you got to enter the main floor to go up the stairs to come back down. Like, yeah.
So also, it did not look ADA compliant. So, didn't look like, if you was in a wheelchair, you was just screwed. Okay. So, I'm just saying, make it accessible.
I am mad at that. However, the ceremony was nice. It was good. I definitely don't like the shade that I almost feel like Karen is single shaming in the sense of, like, you know, 25 years, Giselle and Robin could learn a thing or two. Or, you know, okay, girl, we know you're married.
Yeah, I think she could be a little bit more compassionate about their situations, because, I mean, it's not funny, it's not cute, it's not something to poke fun of, that, you know, but, I mean, similarly, I ain't even gonna try, they be poking fun at her for, you know, things too, so I'm willing to let that go.
I'm just saying. I mean, listen.
Robin
might not be married, but she definitely getting broke off in the bedroom. How about you, Miss Huger?
You don't know what Uncle Ben rolling.
Oh, I know Uncle. Uncle Ben is sleeping.
Look,
the black Bill Gates is asleep.
G and Uncle Ben are the same.
Listen, age, G,
right? Did
G
you see how G tongue was rolling around? You know, so don't look. Don't
G takes performance enhancers. I don't know if the black Bill Gates heart can take them performance enhancers. I don't know. Okay, that's why Karen got her the humpy dump pillow.
Gosh, no, we're not. We're gonna keep moving on. We're not gonna discuss that. That was just too much.
So
am I.
It seems like at every finale party, there is always some drama. And the drama seems to always be around the Darbys. Now, however, I don't always side with Michael, but I kind of sort of was feeling Michael on this argument a little bit, in the sense of, like, so we all know, like, Candace and Chris, they do not get along with Ashley and Michael. Michael has, like, not been around the group this whole season. And it is unlike Michael, because when Michael had the cheating allegations, when Michael had the grinder allegations, he still was coming around the group.
So he was like, I don't care.
So this time, he's definitely made a conscious effort. We know that when Juan proposed to Robin last year and Michael was heartbroken, Chris and him got into a somewhat of a physical altercation. We actually got to see the raw nasty of Michael. Ashley went behind the thing to try to calm him down, and Michael ain't want nothing of it. So he hasn't really been around the Bassetts. And so when Michael got there, he had to sit next to the Bassetts. And let me just tell you, Michael was not here for the shits. And listen, that is my type of petty. Like, I will come and sit and not acknowledge, or, like, you know, or anything that I have to say out of my mouth is going to be very smart until you apologize. Like, and I was not mad at Michael for that.
He definitely, Chris definitely should have apologized for pushing him.
Right.
And I thought this was actually handled pretty well once Juan calmed his lover down.
Okay.
And he was like, Michael, look at my eyes. Michael.
Give me, hug me. Now, again.
Michael did it for the hugs.
That's okay, Michael was like, I'll do anything you say, Juan. Now, again, I feel like Candace with these racial remarks.
Oh my gosh. That I was like, this doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't make sense. This is the whitest privilege ever.
And I was like, are we talking about your husband?
That's what I was saying. I'm like, well, what white privilege are we talking about? Because actually, he's holding no privilege. He's saying, your husband physically attacked me. And your husband is saying, let bygones be bygones. And Michael is saying, no, you actually need to apologize.
So this makes me think that Candace is not too bright. So I hate to call people stupid. Like, for real though. I have a feel, like, I don't think she can process
her information that quickly. Bright.
Correct. So I don't think, I don't know if it's the drinking or whatever, but I don't think she can process information that quickly. And she just screams out, like her husband was saying, the first thing that comes to her mind. Because I was like, what does this got to do with white privilege?
Right.
I was just confused. And so I think she just sometimes tries to say hurtful things.
Gaslighting.
She just tried to say things that have the most impact and are the most hurtful without thinking it through. That's where she can't come through with the yo mama stuff, you know, because she gets so defensive. And it's kind of interesting. I saw Chris and he was just, you know,
over it, embarrassed.
Oh my God. Every time, because he's like, every time you do this, and then she tried to cuss him out. You need to stop talking to me like that. I was like, oh, this is how, you know what? This seems like what she does with her mom.
No, it seems like it's what her mom does to her.
Yes, and then so she's trying to do to what Chris what her mom does to her. So I was like, ooh, hurt people hurt people.
Right, because listen, Chris and Michael, with the assistance of Juan, were able to squash it. And it would have never been done with Candace's spicy ass at the table.
So it was funny because this is the like the kind of thing I was like, when the man said the Twitter thing to her, I thought she was going to pop off, you know, and it was just going to all go south. But, you know, she held it together. But I was like, how are you going to be a successful artist and, you know, have successful businesses if you popping off all the time?
Right.
And plus, you got to learn, like I've learned, to pop off professionally.
Okay, you can't just dump the right.
Right. Lesson learned. That was a few years ago. I've evolved since then, as
you have.
Juan would say.
You have. That was basically the it. Then we got the updates on that on the ladies.
Mm-hmm. Baby number three, Juan and I'm sorry.
Well, Ashley and Michael, they hinted at Ashley is trying for another baby. I said, oh, three.
Mm-hmm. Well, three? You know, if Ashley don't give it to him, Juan and Michael might get together and have a baby three together, because they, you know, Michael will give Juan a baby.
Who would who would carry the baby?
Michael. Maybe a scholar. I don't know. She's trying to get on the show, so you know.
Juan and Robin, they hinted at a baby and they hinted at a new home.
Yeah. They showed the new home, so congrats to them.
They didn't show it. Did they show? They didn't show it.
Yes, they did. They showed it during the show.
I mean, they showed it being built. We haven't seen them like in it.
Oh no. But they showed it being built. I mean, congrats to them.
Congrats.
That's exciting. I hope everything works out for them. I can't wait. Juan is still a very nice looking man, and so is Robin, and you know they have
Robin. Robin's a nice looking man.
No, I did not say that. Though, I mean, that time they dressed up for pizza, she looked
cute. Oh, that was funny. No, she did. She was cute. They said Giselle is no longer dating her sports anchor, Boo, who was in his 30s. And I'm like, yes, Stella, get your groove back. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm here for it.
They so shady. They said Giselle is still working on being more vulnerable. And like Hotel Giselle, still a mess.
Still a work in progress. Hey, ain't nothing wrong with that girl.
What do they say about Wendy? Is I don't even really read Wendy thing. All I know is they said that her
these breasts were coming out of her dress, and maybe she'll have a candle with more than one wick.
Yeah, and child, she couldn't even sit down. Well, who was it? Candace? The debut album came out. They
she
said,
sing. I mean, she's but it's just like, I don't know. I can't buy into what she's selling.
It's a lot. They said that Chris and her mom barely speak.
Dorothy don't need you to speak. Dorothy Doe is right. Okay, boo. She don't need you to speak.
Dottie Doe. And what did they say about the Grand Dame? I don't really, Chad, I like ran to the computer after. I don't remember what they said about the Grand Dame.
That she's fabulous.
I mean, allegedly.
Wait, can we talk a little bit about the reunion? Three parts, I believe. I saw that we had props.
Child, Wendy wants, and Monique moment so bad. It's annoying.
Look, she has to. These people trying to earn it.
But listen, what I will say is that the new Wendy did dethrone Karen, and Wendy is sitting next to Andy. And anyone that knows the housewife, your position on the couch towards Andy is basically like your role in the franchise. And every reunion, it has been Giselle and Karen at the two couches. This year, it is Giselle and Wendy. Okay.
The grand dame's going nowhere.
Nicki Minaj comes out. Okay. We see that Wendy or Mia might have alleged that Chris Bassett ate her groceries.
Tossed her salad, I think, was.
Okay, sorry. Tossed the salad. That's the same thing, though. Well, no, maybe it's not. I think the salad from the back, the groceries might be on the other end. So, okay, you're right.
Is it?
Toss the salad. We see Karen throwing shade at Giselle in the essence that Jamal Bryant owes taxes. And during the time that he owes the taxes, Giselle was allegedly still married to him. And we all know how Giselle was with when the black Bill Gates was going through it. So Karen was like, my suggestion is lawyer up. We also see.
Now, to be honest, that's good advice.
I mean, yeah, but it is like, it's the housewife karma. Like, you know, you make fun of somebody's situation, just like Ashley. Ashley was all on Robin and Juan first two seasons, and then whoop, came back around. But we also saw a possible vulnerable moment at the reunion with Giselle, and Karen is talking about, like, you know, Andy says, you know, you divorced him because he was unfaithful. You got back together with him when we were unfaithful. Then we see a shot of Karen saying, like, in my hearts of hearts, I never believed that you should have taking him back. Then we see a clip of Giselle tearing up. Then we see a clip of Karen saying, oh, don't make me cry. But y'all know how the Bravo editing is. That probably was like eight different scenes of eight different things.
That's true, but I am here to piece it together. I'm ready.
Yes. So listen, guys, in 3 weeks, I was about to say Giselle and I will be back. In 3 weeks, okay, Mrs. Bryant and I will break down the reunion for you.
The first lady,
okay, of the tabernacle,
right,
of Cagayan
Church. Announced the first lady of Cagayan and the Purple Pants podcast will be joined by Mr. Bryce Isaiah, and we will be back with all the fresh deets. We gonna, of course, have our fashion review. Have a feeling that, again, we talked about it. They released it, right? All the dresses, they're wearing pink. Love that color, bright and popping on the ladies. So I'm here for it. I'm here for the melanin. I saw the husbands who are coming out. So we'll see. Let's see if they invite G and his rolling tongue. If Mia can remember the phrases that are being said by the time people get to her. And if, you know, Ascala has anything to add to the conversation.
We did see her sing on the couch. I'd be curious to see if she sits the whole couch or she's brought out and is squirted back out.
She's going to be a bring in by, is what I call those people.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for listening to another complete season recap of Real Housewives of Potomac. Jatia, thank you for gracing the podcast. It's something I look forward to. You got anything cooking you want to plug before we're out?
No, I don't have anything cooking right now, but believe me, I have some new things in the new year. So Mama is in the lab. Dr. Mama, Reverend First Lady of Cagayan and Purple Pants podcast. It will have more deets for you, but I'm just happy to be here.
Yes, thank you, and thank you for popping out at Bryson Wynn Presents The District. It was such a great addition. Yes, you turned it out. But listen, guys, we'll be back in 3 weeks breaking down the reunion. Until then, we out.
It's the Purple Pants. It's the Purple Pants.
Who's the freak? Who's the freak? Who's the freak of the week? Who's that? Who's that? Who's that freaky, freaky, freak? Who's the freak of the week? Might be me, might be you, might be.
And we are on to this week's Freak of the Week, and it is none other than yours truly, your baby boy, okay? I'm as confused as a goat on AstroTurf. Listen, I done broke the internet with my Halloween costume as a goat on AstroTurf. But I have to tell y'all the story behind that because, okay, so, you know, Halloween's a big deal. You know, last 2 years I was a zebra. Last year I was the tiger to the Tiger King. And mind you, I don't know if y'all heard. Y'all know Tiger King 2 is getting ready to come out. So listen, Netflix trying to have us back on the Tiger King. And so I was like, I don't really know what I want to be this year. And then we had the Bryson Wynn Presents, the district. And out the blue, Wendell's like, we should do a Halloween costume. Now, first of all, y'all know all the last 2 years I be eating Wendell in the Halloween costumes. And Wendell's like, I got a great idea for a costume. We should tell the people if they want to come dressed up that we could do it. Now, mind you, just a week before the party. And I'm like, well, okay. And so my original costume that I wanted to do was be a broccoli, okay? You know, keep it Survivor themed and fun. But baby, the costume that I wanted won. First of all, the broccoli costumes are expensive. Let's just say that. And you know me, if I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. Happened to be a pay week when Wendell said this. So I said, okay, spend a couple of coins on, you know, a little broccoli. But first of all, the broccoli was $300, okay? I was getting ready to call Barb and be like, Barb, let me borrow that credit card. But even with me willing to spend them coins, the costume wouldn't have come until November 2nd. What I'm going to do for November 2nd? So I'm like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to figure this out. So then I was like, you know what? Let me just go with something simple. I'm going to go with Squid Game. Okay, I was like, ooh, that's fun, trendy, on topic. Squid Game. Also, the costumes. I went on Amazon. Wouldn't get here till November 3rd. Then I'm like, you know what? Let me go on the Google, try to find it. And so I went on and I kept finding these places that have like 3-day shipping. And so, but I wanted to ensure that they were like shipping from the US because like if it's shipping from like China or anywhere else, I know it's going to take forever. So I tried to do my due diligence. I found this place that had 3-day shipping, you know, paid the extra $20, put my order in, boom. Then I get my tracking number. Then I look at like, you know, when they print the label out and I could see that, I'm like, oh my God, it's in China. And so I waited a couple of days and I'm like, oh my God, it's not going to get here in time. I got to think of an audible. Okay. I got to follow my intuition. And so I was like, oh my God, what else can I do that's funny and that people would get? And so I was like, oh my God, a goat. Found a couple of goat costumes that was reasonably priced. Okay. Ordered them. But then I'm like, oh my God, they're not going to be in time for the Bryson Wynn Presents party. And I'm like, well, I already just ordered. Listen, I didn't order two costumes. Y'all ain't getting no more out of me. But then I'm like, I can't just be a goat. You know, it's AstroTurf. So literally, I didn't went, okay, to the Home Depot, bought some AstroTurf. I didn't order some butterflies, ordered some broccoli. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to kill this. So I called my friend Sarah. I was like, listen, when I get back from DC, I need for us to go take these photos. But in the meantime, I'm like, what am I going to be for the Bryson Wynn Presents party? I wanted to be a broccoli. So I found a broccoli shirt. And when the goat costume came in, I'm like, I don't know if this is really going to work. But when me and my friend Sarah took the photos, they were just so epic. And like, you know, shout out to my friend Sarah. Cause like, she was like, only you. She was like, you are just so extra. I'm like, I am extra, but I feel like the Survivor fans will get it. And listen, I tell you all the time, I don't feel like a Survivor player. I feel like I'm a Survivor fan. I'm like, they won't get it. They're going to get it. And so when I got to look at the photos, I'm like, oh my God, these are amazing. We took a little video. I didn't put it up on the internet on Friday, and baby, I woke up to people just going crazy. Okay. And I loved it. And I love the fact that people got it. I love the fact that y'all saw the detail and listen to butterflies and my beard. Okay. Cause butterflies are just dead relatives saying hi. Okay. Or like, you know, broccoli's and nothing but smoke. All trees. And it was just so much fun. I just love Halloween. The more and more as an adult, I just feel like, you know what? I need to throw me a Halloween party. But I hope that everyone had an amazing time. And so listen, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the goat costume, you can head over to my TikTok, okay, Bryce Isaiah. You can head over to the Twitter, Bryce Isaiah. You can head over to the Instagram, Bryce Isaiah. You can head over to the Facebook, aka the Meta World, whatever, you know, Mark Zuckerberg we're talking about. But yes, and I just appreciated the response. I really felt like y'all got it, okay? Because we go together. So if I, the goat that is confused as a goat on AstroTurf, is the freak of the week, that means we are coming to an end of another amazing episode. Thank you guys so much for turning DC out. Thank you guys for turning this episode out. Thank you for always supporting any and everything that I do. I cannot tell you how much it means to me. If you have not already, please make sure you are subscribed to the Purple Pens podcast, okay? We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, wherever it is that you get your podcast from. We are there. Hit the subscribe button, write a review, give your baby boy some 5 stars. My Uncle Pookie is still riding around. It's getting a little cold in Philly, so you can catch him with the subscription in the back of his trunk, okay? And make sure that you tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to follow your intuition, because it's the Purple Pens, it's the Purple Pens, it's the Purple Pens podcast. You better get your headphones and listen up quick. It's the Purple Pens podcast. You better listen in public, might make your stomach hurt. It's the Purple Pens podcast. You're trying to unwind, you better get that box wine. It's the Purple Pens podcast. You're trying to get your snack, you better hurry right back though. It's the Purple Pens, it's the Purple Pens.